One of the things I realized in my first year of teaching third grade is that there are things that I don't remember learning. Things so commonsensical that I simply must have been born knowing them. As a newbie teacher, I was stunned at these beings' ignorance. How could they not know this? And then I remembered, these kids have only been on the planet for 8 years, and it was my job to teach them. In 10 years of teaching, I learned the wisdom in the old adage that common sense isn't common. Not common at all. No one is born with it. Indeed, it usually only arrives after some very hard knocks. I would tell my third graders that if they were very, very, very lucky, they might be able to learn from someone else's mistake. Far more often, they would learn the hardest lessons only by making their own mistakes, sometimes making the same mistake 2 or 3 or 10 times. When kids in my class would do something noteworthy, solve a problem, learn a new word, do something kind or simply polite, I used to give them a jelly belly. You know those little jelly beans that are particularly tangy or sweet in flavors like root beer or tangerine or popcorn? It was my compromise between rewarding them with candy, which sends a terrible message, and still giving them some tangible affirmation for their efforts. I had heard somewhere about a rabbi who taught Hebrew, and when his students learned a new letter, he gave them that letter on a special paper that tasted like honey when they licked it. He wanted his students to know that learning is sweet. I did too. Now and then, I would give a jelly belly to a student for making a really good mistake. A mistake that we could all learn from. I would say, thank you, thank you, thank you for that fabulous mistake. I was hoping someone would make it. And then I'd make quite a show of handing them the treat. Now the kids would usually look up at me as if I had gone mildly bonkers. School culture rewards accomplishment and getting the answer right. So they didn't know what to make of it when I did my happy teacher dance for a mistake. And honestly, I'm not sure they ever got what I was up to. My fond hope is that some of them, now, years later, have had one of those forehead-slapping moments, perhaps after pulling a real whopper, and thought, oh, that's what Ms. Warschnopf was talking about. Maybe some of that has happened somewhere. But the truth is that none of us particularly likes making mistakes. We often think we're supposed to get things right on the first try, and if we don't, we kick ourselves or apologize profusely or feel privately ashamed. And even when we give ourselves permission to not know, to acknowledge that sometimes we have to practice things a few times to get it right, we still say, practice makes perfect. As if it's only all right to make mistakes on our way to perfection. But what if we shifted that slightly and said that practice makes progress? What if we tried to learn from errors and mistakes? What if the goal is not perfection, but learning and growing? Progress rather than perfection. There's a way in which all our lives are really just one big, long practice session. When I was a teenager, I used to look ahead to a time when I would have it all figured out, when I'd essentially no longer be practicing and I could move through life with the kind of assured grace I longed for. Now, at 16, I thought I would achieve this state by the time I was 35. Then, at last, I'd have it all together. This was an irony not lost on me on my 35th birthday. And yet, now that I'm in my 50s, I do sometimes have something like that feeling. Every so often, I come across a situation that I really seem to know how to handle. Perhaps at last I've lived long enough and practiced enough times and made enough mistakes that I have learned something. It's a lovely, if fleeting, feeling. Life really is just one long practice session. So what if we simply embrace it? Not resist or think there's something wrong with us that apparently we still need to practice even as the decades accumulate. And it's not just that we practice, but what we practice that matters as well. You have practices as a congregation, ways of doing things that have become so habituated, you probably don't even notice. It's part of my job here with you to help you notice, to hold up the mirror so that you can see too. Some of your habits are healthy and good, making for a community that makes a difference in the world. Other practices are less effective and useful. Some of your habits even get in the way. Which is which? We'll find out some of that together. Yet another kind of practice can be the attitude that you bring to situations, here in the church and in your lives. A dear friend and colleague taught me the practice of saying, yes, and, rather than yes, but. Yes, and is an open and invitational stance to the world, a practice of being open to possibilities, of moving toward those possibilities, not necessarily confident that it will all work out, but knowing that we're all practicing here and trusting each other. How often have you responded to a new idea by saying, yes, but here are all the ways that that won't work? Or yes, that's all fine and good, but here's the really good idea I have. Worst of all is when we don't say yes at all, only challenge, criticize, or demand. Yes, but closes down discussion. Yes, and opens and invites possibility. What if you here at the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship decided to take on a practice of saying yes and to one another? Yes, that's a very interesting idea, and it makes me think of this. Or yes, and have you thought of it this way? Or yes, and maybe we could do this too. Or yes, and we could tweak it this way to make it work better. If the first response is saying, yes, and I'm including my thoughts into yours, I've seen your idea as an invitation into your perspective, your way of seeing the world. Yes, and continues the thread, keeps the process creative and alive. Simply saying no is like being the first inverted, upside-down bowl in the reading that Deborah offered this morning. Nothing new can ever enter. Saying yes, but is like being the second bowl, cracked and filled up with debris, polluting what's poured in. Saying yes, and is the third empty bowl, ready to receive and invite. Ready to be open to the vibrancy of life in every person, the sacredness of our being human. Now, this is another thing. I tell you this because, in part at least, I have to practice this one myself. My first response, very often, is to think of all the reasons something won't work. I leap to the no, and then I am terribly, terribly proud of myself for finding my way back to yes. How lovely for me. I almost always get around to the yes, but in the meantime, how much has been shut down? And so this is a practice I hope to bring even more fully into this interim ministry with you. For the truth is that I get to practice on you too. And you get to practice doing things in new ways. Your practicing is not with the goal of becoming the perfect church awaiting the perfect minister, because neither of those exist. The practice is to make progress toward being the church, the people you want to be, finding the minister you want to journey there with. Life in any community is also really one long practice session. So what if we had a practice in our lives in this community of looking at everything that happens and saying, yes, and? Yes, and now what? What next? How can I add to the conversation, to the process? How can we make progress together? This is a profound spiritual practice for us as Unitarian Universalists, because our faith is defined by open-minded, open-hearted stance in the world. We are defined by this openness to the universe even more than our devotion to reason and tolerance. Our religious forebears were the ones who resisted orthodoxy and dogma from 2,000 years ago and more, right to the very present moment. Our religious forebears are those who rejected creeds that arrived at given truth and then stopped. Our people are the ones who knew who knew that revelation is not sealed, that the holy source from which life springs is continually creating and recreating, showing up in the world in new ways. As if God is always saying, yes, and we get to fill in the blanks. Yes, and is also a typical exercise in theater improvisation. My colleague, the Reverend Alan Taylor, recently spent sabbatical time taking improvisation classes at Second City in Chicago, the improv group that trained many of the folks who wound up on Saturday Night Live. The practice of improv, Alan says, is to clear the mind and simply respond to whatever is in the moment, to follow whatever instinct emerges. It's a form of play, even though it can be very serious. The ultimate goal is not necessarily to be funny, but to do three things, Alan says. Just show up. Let go of the inner critic and constant chatter of the mind, and respond naturally, spontaneously, to what has just gone before. There are risks involved. It is not necessarily going to go well. Yet, to make it work at all requires a willingness to be present and trust your partner. Ellen says that there were times in improv exercises that he embarrassed himself. But at its center, improv is really a practice. A practice of spontaneity. One of the basic rules for improv, he goes on, is yes and, where the goal is to affirm what the other person says and add a new dimension to the story or scene in which one finds oneself. It isn't about the individual. It's about giving yourself to the interaction, supporting the other, and being willing to go where the spirit beckons. Alan found the practice of improv very much akin to a spiritual practice. Spiritual practice, he says, helps people move through the world more skillfully by cultivating a greater capacity for sustained attention Spiritual practice helps people be more awake. He goes on, if we are to live meaningful, engaging lives, we need to embrace practices that get us out of that small s self and deal more effectively with the unexpected, the uncertain, the unplanned. Indeed, much of our lives unfold in ways we never imagined they would. And if we are not able to respond creatively, flexibly, imaginatively, we will not cope with the changes that are inherent in life. How might this speak to your life? How might it speak to the life of this congregation, especially in the midst of this interim time we enter? What if you took a yes and approach to all your life? What if you said, what if you not just said yes to life, but you invited life, connection, meaning into your daily experience? What if you took the stance of looking for what each day offers? Yes. Yes, and what now? What else? What new thing might happen? We do often speak about reason and tolerance as the cornerstones of our faith. Yet our foundation lies upon this kind of open and invitational stance on the world. We are open to new truth, to new understanding of the holy and the meaning and purpose of our lives. Now, there's also a reason that these are called practices. And it's because we have to practice. We will not necessarily get it right on the second, third, or 17th time. Practice in this sense does not make perfect, and that is part of the point. Practice means not just that we keep trying, it means that we remain open. So, what are the practices in your life? What are your practices as a church community? What if you held this place, this community, to be a place to practice? That's profoundly what this interim time is about, taking on new practices, figuring out the "we've always done it this ways," and seeing which ones you want to keep and which ones might just be old, ineffective habits. During this time, you'll be practicing new things. So, what if you truly practiced? Gave yourself permission to get it wrong sometimes. Gave yourself permission to feel silly and awkward. What if you even congratulated yourself on a really grand mistake now and then? What if you laughed at yourself when you stepped in the same pile for the 18th time? What if you brought a heart open to new possibility in your life? What if you saw yourself as a new soul in a strange world every day? What if you accepted that you're not going to get it right every time, that you're not going to please everyone every time? What if you let yourself just dance now and then? We do keep practicing. We hold ourselves open. We show up. We await the unexpected, the uncertain, the unplanned. We seek to respond creatively, flexibly, imaginatively. Let your goal be not perfection, but progress. And go forth with joy and verve, with an open, flexible heart and mind. Let your goal be progress. May you take on a practice of saying yes and to life. Amen. And may it be so. Now is the time when we take up the offering for the sustenance and nurture of this community. You bring this community into being by your generosity. You create this community by bringing your gifts to this place, by practicing. Will the ushers please come forward?
And God forbid love ever leave you empty-handed. I hope you still feel small when you stand beside the ocean. Whenever one door closes, I hope one door opens. And promise me that you'll give faith a fighting chance. When you get the choice to sit it out or dance, I hope you dance. I hope you dance. I hope you never fear those mountains in the distance and never settle for the path of least resistance. Living might mean taking chances, but they're worth taking. Loving might be a mistake, but it's worth making. Don't let some hell-bent lard leave you bitter. And when you come close to settle out, reconsider. Give the heavens above more than just a passing glance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance, I hope you dance. I hope you dance. I hope you dance. I hope you dance. Stand beside the ocean. Whenever one door closes, I hope one more opens. Promise me that you'll give faith a fighting chance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance, I hope you dance.